The seventh case today is United States versus Kubich.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Reed Coyne for the appellant, Bryce Sobiak.
Well, I get that very good today.
Took me a while, too, Your Honors. In Mr. Sobiak's case, the guidelines have been treated as presumptive. The guidelines ought to be taken seriously, but by treating the guidelines as presumptive, the guidelines continue to overshadow the factors listed in the other factors listed in 18 U.S.C. 3553 sub A. This in turn causes an imbalance in the application of that statute and, in effect, makes the guidelines mandatory. As such, Mr. Sobiak's sentence was not reasonable because the court failed to follow statutory law and violated Mr. Sobiak's constitutional rights under the Sixth Amendment. The provisions of Section 3553A require courts to look at a wide range of factors: age, social economic status, family concerns, drug use, employment, education and vocational training, among others, all need to be considered. Many of the directives in or espoused by 3553 sub A conflict with the directives of the advisory guidelines. Age, family, education, and so forth are not to be considered by the guidelines in most cases. In most cases, the guidelines offer only prison, whereas the mandatory factors of Section 3553 sub A may suggest probation as a more meaningful means of punishment deterrence. In Mr. Sobiak's case, the court rejected his request for probation on the totality of the circumstances, factors that individually do not allow departure under the guidelines. However, the 3553 sub A factors forwarded by Mr. Sobiak, age, employment, social economic status, family issues, can be looked at and used to determine an appropriate sentence that considers the seriousness of the crime, the character of the offense, and the need to protect the public. But by relying solely on the guidelines, the court is essentially focusing all of its energy on the seriousness of the offense. The court went as far as to say in sentencing that it did not deem Mr. Sobiak a threat or a danger to the public. Now, the district court treated the guidelines as presumptive in this manner. In sentencing Mr. Sobiak, the district court relied on a pre-sentence investigation report prepared by U.S. Probation and Parole. Two places in that PSR mentioned 18 U.S.C. 3553 sub A. Paragraph 24 states, quote, "The court will also consider the other factors and the statutory purposes of sentencing set out in 18 U.S.C. Section 3553 sub A," close quote. And then the last sentence of the last paragraph, probation officer notes, quote, "The court may review the sentencing factors listed in 18 U.S.C. Section 3553 sub A for further guidance." That is it. No analysis of the factors set out in 3553 sub A. Not even a mention of the factors. The district court followed the same pattern. On page 11 of the transcript, the district court noted section 3553 sub A twice, stating that the guidelines were advisory only and that it will consider the statutory purposes of sentencing under 3553 sub A. In the next paragraph, the court noted that it was imposing a sentence consistent with the provisions of 3553 sub A and uses the guidelines. Again, that is it.
Well, he did say, for example, part of the purpose of the sentencing was to achieve the sentencing objectives of punishment, rehabilitation, and deterrence, which is right out of it.
Yes, but that's part of it, but I think that's just a blanket statement.
Of course, that's one he was focusing on. What, for example, did he examine the military record of Mr. Sobiak?
The PSR provided a little about that, but not a great deal. But the judge did comment on his military service and, in fact, held that against Mr. Sobiak in this case.
And that's because why?
Because Mr. Sobiak took a pound and a quarter of C4 explosive.
Was he on active duty when this happened?
I believe at that time he was not on active duty. It was a training exercise. He was given two bricks of C4, each weighing a pound and a quarter. And in a spontaneous and irresponsible decision of his, decided that he wanted to, as he put it, continue the fun at home. And he took the C4.
He didn't try to sell it?
After encouragement from his wife and a friend, he did agree to allow his friend to sell it. The friend informed him, this was about 3 months later, the friend later informed Mr. Sobiak that he had disposed of the C4 in a swamp. Mr. Sobiak went out to the swamp to ensure that the C4 was, in fact, disposed of and not laying around where somebody could find it. Couldn't find it, spent a considerable time out there, and then felt the matter was done with. 2 years later, his estranged wife, in a what appears to be a child custody battle, notified the authorities about the missing C4, and here we are today.
But he was going to sell it to take care of some drug problems that he had.
There was some discussion about that.
So it kind of gets worse as we...
There was some discussion about that. Drugs were an issue in his life. There was a discussion that his wife was encouraging him to sell the C4 for drugs. He fought that for a while and then finally caved in to his wife and his girlfriend, or to his wife and his friend. But the fact remains that the guidelines are being treated presumptively in this case. And that means the guidelines are being treated mandatory. I looked at some of the cases out of the Court of Appeals. In Dean, the court held that Booker required a district court to calculate the guidelines and then decide whether the guideline calculation is correct. The court has also noted that if the guidelines are properly calculated, the sentence is reasonable, and the judge does not need to go into any detail as to why the sentence was chosen. In fact, the decision goes on to say the judge does not even have to consider the other mandatory factors, or at least note them, unless a defendant raises those factors. The reason behind this is that the myriad factors that a court would have to address could consume a great deal of time. So in a sense, what's happening here is that it appears that judicial economy is taking precedence over a defendant's right, statutory rights, and constitutional rights. Other cases have dealt with it in the same way.
Now, what it shows really is that there's a lot of irrationality in this whole system.
I would agree there's a lot of irrationality.
I could make an argument here that this guy's sentence, 18 months, he deserves more for what he did than the last Judge Shabazz case from the Western District we just heard, where the guy got 135 months and a drug deal. This stealing explosives from the military sounds to me like something maybe a little more serious than that.
And it is serious. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And there's attorneys in my firm who will forward the arguments that you are forwarding. But it still doesn't get away from the fact that the guidelines are being treated presumptively. They are first looked at, even though they are a factor among many factors, factors that are, in fact, mandatory that a court must look at.
Maybe we should go back to the wonderful days before there were any guidelines. And judges like Judge Keeney and I, when we were in the district court, we sentenced without guidelines. I can't say all those sentences were unconstitutional because there were no jury findings of certain factors that judges always considered. So we did that in this country until November 1 of 1987.
And there were no appeals from the sentence.
And there were no appeals. And now we have just two Judge Shabazz cases, and in a few minutes we're going to hear two appeals in Judge Stadmuller's cases. Where,
of course, there is a trend of being from Wisconsin.
It is. We have a lot of guideline cases in Wisconsin.
And I would agree with you, and I'll reserve some time for rebuttal if I have any time.
All right.
Thank you.
Compliment the lawyers in your firm that made the argument that I was just making.
Mr. Reinhart.
Good morning. David Reinhardt for the United States from the Western District of Wisconsin.
I want to make it. Would you tell me, I asked if he was on active duty. Was he in the reserves? What's the situation?
He was in the reserves. It was a training exercise.
So he was in the reserves, not on active duty, but just...
That's correct. The court didn't rely solely on the guidelines in this particular case. The district court complied with Booker in sentencing this particular defendant. Specifically, the court noted that the guidelines were advisory rather than mandatory in this case on several occasions, and the district court also considered the 3553A factors, specifically noted the defendant's age, his minimal criminal history, defendant's character through all the letters that were sent on his behalf, and the serious nature of the offense and the objectives of sentencing, such as rehabilitation and punishment. This court has held that you don't have to go through all the factors in a checklist fashion and describe which weight ought to be given to which factor, especially here where this particular defendant was sentenced to the very bottom of the advisory guideline range. And the district... There's absolutely no evidentiary support for Mr. Cornea's position that the district court is simply ignoring the advisory nature of the guidelines in this case and other cases. So based on the brief and the argument here today, we would ask this court to affirm the district court decision.
Thank you, counsel. You have 1 minute, counsel.
I will note a couple of things in regards to Judge Shabazz's mentioning of age and social economic status. That was brought up because we brought them up in terms of a downward departure under the guidelines. That discussion was part of the discussion of the guidelines. That the whole sentencing was about the guidelines. I think it's reasonable to have courts provide a sentence that considers all the factors, not just the guidelines. And if they're going to choose the guidelines, then to state why the guidelines apply in contradiction to many of the other factors within the guidelines. I think judicial economy is important, but I also think it's more important for a defendant to understand the length its sentence and why that sentence is being imposed. The guidelines do not provide that. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Cornea, you took this case by appointment, did you?
I did, Your Honor.
And the court expresses its thanks for your representation of your client in this matter. Thank you very much.